Good afternoon. Welcome to the second day of our June panel of the Court of Appeals. I'm pleased to be with Rico Bishop on my right from Lincoln and Mike Hurdle from Omaha, left. Right now. We only have two cases on today's call. I will call each case name twice for purposes of the recording that is occurring. So please don't start your argument until after I've called it for the second time. That we will proceed with our first case, Dunbar versus Twin Towers Condominium Association. Dunbar versus Twin Towers Condominium Association.
May it please the court. My name is, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Mark Dunbar, and I am the appellant in this case. My case involves my dispute with the 171-unit Condominium Association that I am a member of in Omaha. This court's ruling today, however, is going to affect the rights and responsibilities of hundreds of condominium associations in the state of Nebraska and thousands of individual condominium unit owners like me, because the issues in this case are fundamental to every association and its members. I'm going to focus on the two most fundamental points of error in this case. First, the trial court erred with respect to its application of the legal requirements for recording an amendment to the master deed of the condominium regime. In this case, there was an amendment to the covenants in the master deed insofar as it pertained to pets. Now, there are three sources for the requirements of recording a master deed amendment: the master deed itself, Nebraska statutes, and Nebraska case law. All three of these are in agreement. They all require a writing, signed and acknowledged, that is notarized, by owners having the required percentage of ownership. This was my primary argument in the trial court below, but this argument was simply ignored completely in the judge's ruling. Any amendment, all three of these sources will tell you that any amendment to a deed of any kind has to be in writing, acknowledged, meaning notarized, and signed by the required percentage of owners. This deed amendment, therefore, is void and invalid on its face, and this court should reverse and remand to the trial court with instructions to enter judgment in favor of the plaintiff. The second, and perhaps the more far-reaching point in this case, has to do with the trial court's failure to follow the statutory directive with respect to making condominium association records available to an owner such as myself who wishes to examine them. Now, the Nebraska statute on point, section 76-876, is extremely clear. It says that all, that's all in quotes, financial and other records must be made available to unit owners who request to examine them.
Are they making them available on the website they established after this?
They make some records available. They do not make all records available, and they certainly did not make the records that I asked to examine. Yes, some records subsequent to this lawsuit were posted on a website. Not the ones, not all of the ones I asked for.
And you acknowledge in your brief, you don't dispute that the Nonprofit Act or Nonprofit Corporation Act would apply, but your position is that the condominium laws are more specific and therefore they would control with regard to records.
Absolutely, yes. Not every condominium association is a nonprofit. So the fact that there are rules that apply to partnerships, there are rules that apply to nonprofits, there are slightly different rules that apply to corporations. I'm not asking with my nonprofit corporation member hat on. I'm asking with my condominium unit owner hat on. Those rights are far more expansive than the rights that are afforded to stockholders or members in corporations. And that is because, as other courts addressing this issue have observed, the responsibilities of a condominium owner like me are much different than they are for a stockholder or a member. I am personally responsible for my percentage share of every dollar that this corporation spends. The only money, well, substantially all of the money that it takes in are dues that are paid by owners like me, and we have to pay whatever the condominium board sets as dues. We have no ability to veto it. So for that reason, and our condominium is no different than any other, and for that reason, as the courts that I've cited in my brief observe, condominium owners are given extraordinary, unfettered access to condominium association records because their interest in those records is far different than they would be for a mere stockholder or member of a nonprofit corporation.
Can I ask you about within the newer Condominium Act, there's a section that neither you nor opposing counsel addressed in their 76-832, which talks about the principles of law and equity and corporations and so forth can supplement these sections of the newer Act unless they're inconsistent with it. And I wonder if you had considered that particular statute or if your position is it doesn't apply because it wasn't actually identified as one of the newer sections that should apply to the older condominiums.
I'm sure that's the reason. That is that because our condominium association was established just before the active date for the subsequent act, that certain, or the majority of the new act doesn't necessarily apply.
The statute at issue here does. It was specifically set forth, right?
Correct.
But because that other statute wasn't set forth, is it your position it wouldn't apply? Because it would help you. It would help your argument.
I don't know. I don't think my argument needs any help, but it well, certainly
okay.
would. I'm not arguing that, but it doesn't apply, so I guess I wouldn't come before this court and make an argument that could be dismissed so easily to say, well, that statute isn't inapplicable to this regime.
Since the statute which does make this 876 apply comes within the sections that are listed in 832, that it still would be your position that doesn't help you there.
Well, I'll take all the help I can get. However, I don't think I need to go that direction to make it applicable. It's 876 is directly applicable. I don't really feel I need to backdoor into 832 to get to where I need to be. The cases I've cited are
this
unanimous.
This will be a better question for opposing counsel.
Perhaps.
Okay. Can I have you address why you believe 876, when it talks about examining the records, why that also includes being able to copy the records?
Yeah, I cited extensive briefs on it indicating, although Nebraska has not addressed this issue specifically, all the other states that have are in agreement, as well as the Nonprofit Act, which counsel for the association conceded at the trial court level, includes the right to copy. So for the trial court to hold that you can't copy the records that you're able to examine, as far as I can tell, that ruling would stand on its own among any court that looks at these kinds of issues. So I don't see any support for that notion.
Does that prevent you from taking your cell phone and taking photographs of the records?
Well, I think if it precluded copying, I would probably read it that way if I were them. But I think today it's a lot easier to copy records many ways. You know, you can bring your own scanner. You don't really need a Xerox machine or a photocopy company. It's a lot easier to make copies. But then the question becomes, was the trial court right? And nobody can copy anything. You just got to, you're only left with whatever you can memorize from examining these detailed records of numbers and such.
The other part of that, though, is if the legislature, like the Nonprofit Act, says they wanted you to be able to examine and copy, they could have said that.
That's true. But I think when you examine what the statutory scheme also has that imperative to make the laws uniform among the various states that adopted this particular Condominium Act. And so I think when you look in that direction and say, well, every other state and the Uniform Law Commission has subsequently expanded upon the language to make it clear that what they meant was all records, I think that would be the appropriate thing to do.
I'd like to clarify something with regard to the Master Deed Amendment. You're saying that it's invalid on its face, and I know your opposing counsel wrote in their brief that they supplied evidence to show that it was valid and that there was no evidence supplied to show it wasn't. And if I understand your argument correctly, it's that by attaching the list of all the condominium owners, that's not the same thing as what's required by the master deed, which is that they must all sign that
amendment. Right. I certainly contradicted that all did, because I certainly didn't sign it, approve it. That was a list of everybody, every single owner, not just the ones that supposedly approved it. But my point is, if it isn't in writing, signed, and notarized by the required owners, it's void right there.
That two-thirds of the owners had to actually sign off on that amendment.
Correct, as they have in prior. I won't testify that they notarized every signature, but prior amendments were signed by all of the owners.
And that process could have been changed by the bylaws, but there's nothing in these bylaws that would suggest they did. But
these bylaws have, been amended only once in a very minimal fashion. Right. Thank you.
May it please the court, Mr. Dunbar. My name is Dennis Lee. I represent the Twin Towers Condominium Association. For purposes of clarifying the record, the court, I'm sure, noted that there was an additional defendant, LRC Management. LRC was named in one of the causes of action in the district court matter, but that cause of action is not subject to this appeal. With regard to this case, there are three causes of action of the seven that Mr. Dunbar filed that are before you today, and that both parties, I believe, have extensively briefed the issues. Third cause of action is the 2010 Pett Amendment. I'll address the court's inquiries of Mr. Dunbar in a moment. The other two causes of action before you today, I've consolidated them, as I did in my brief, for purposes of argument and also for purposes of summary, are the sixth and seventh causes of action, which I've generically referred to as the records request causes of action. I also have a cross appeal that is pending as it relates to the appellee's claim of a frivolous action under 25.824 and requesting fees and costs that was initially filed with the district court as part of a motion for summary judgment and was not yet ruled on by the court. With regard to the court's question earlier to Mr. Dunbar about copying documents and making those accessible, the court has clearly reviewed the record in the briefs, and the court is aware that the appellee does have a website, it does have a computer in its office for individual residents and owners that do not have access to the internet, and all of the financial records that are maintained by the association, and I'll explain maintain the definition of that for this purpose later.
Can we stop for just a minute,
yes,
Mr. Lee, and talk about 76876? If that statute is the provision we deem applies here, and it says all financial and other records of the association shall be made reasonably available, by putting the financial records on the website, maybe that begins to comply with that, but it's not the totality of what that statute seems to indicate should be made available.
I would agree, Judge. I think all means all.
Yeah.
And from that standpoint, as I've indicated in my brief and as the evidence that was submitted to the trial court confirmed, there were documents that were requested by the appellant that are simply not maintained by this homeowners association. I understand the appellant's argument in his brief and at trial was that the recommended accounting requires this. Well, that may be true, but the gist of the matter is that in complying with 76876, as well as the Nonprofit Act requirements on maintenance and disclosure of records, the association adopted a resolution which was received by the court as Exhibit 8. And that resolution essentially cut and paste provisions from 76876 and the Nonprofit Corporation Act as it relates to records.
But the Nonprofit Corporation Act, with regard to records, narrows what becomes accessible, right?
It does.
So we have this rub between those two statutory schemes, right?
That's
one says all, and one narrows and has certain conditions attached attached to it.
I would agree with the court's assessment, yes.
So let me ask you now then about that 76832, which is not laid out in 826, which has all the specific sections of the new Condominium Act that will apply to condominiums created before 1984, right?
Right.
But these particular sections apply to acts that occur after 1984.
Right.
Okay. It lists specific statutes. It does not list 832, which talks about the principles of law and equity and other corporations can supplement the provisions but cannot be inconsistent. Is it your position that statute should not apply since it's not specifically laid out in 826?
No, I think there's a paradox here with regard to the appellee being kind of wearing two hats, as it were. One is a nonprofit corporation. The second one is it's clearly a condominium association where the statute applies. So in doing that, and I'll be the first one to disclose to the court that Exhibit 8, the resolution that was adopted by the association's board of directors, does not paraphrase nor does it cut and paste from 76832. It's our position that while 76832 is certainly part of the Nonprofit Act, the operative provision as it relates to this situation before the court and what was before the trial court a year ago is 76876, not to exclude in any manner 76832.
Well, so if we're looking at more general or statutes like the Nonprofit Corporation Act versus condominium, wouldn't you agree that the Condominium Act is a more specific set of laws applicable to condominium owners?
Oh, I agree. I
so
would agree.
Shouldn't that control?
The Condominium Act?
Yes.
I believe the Condominium Act is the proper mechanism to control the activities of a condominium property that is governed under and by virtue of the not of the Nebraska Condominium Act.
And including access to records.
Including access to records. As we discussed earlier, all means all. Now, the issue there, getting back to all meaning all, is that Mr. Dunbar and portions of his request was verbatim in my brief, and I'm not going to review that now, but there were records that were requested by Mr. Dunbar in his numerous records requests. We had, I think, four over the course of 18 or 20 months. It's in my brief. That the association simply does not maintain. And Mr. Dunbar was advised that those records are not maintained.
I hear what you're saying with regard to that argument, but my question is really more focused on if we have two competing statutes, isn't the more specific statute the one that should control? And that's the all means all
I agree.
Statute. And yet the association passed a resolution which narrowed. It no longer is all means all under the resolution.
I understand what the court's position is, and I guess respectfully, I would disagree in this fashion only, Judge, and that would be that as an entity wearing two hats, nonprofit corporation and a condominium act, by its resolution, which was received as Exhibit 8, the Board of Directors essentially consolidated those two statutes. I'm not disputing that all means all, but all means all in relation to what is maintained. There may be a generally accepted accounting principle nationally of the Nebraska or the Condominium Acts in all 50 states that may require different things. They may do it in terms of generally accepted accounting principles. But if the association, in its discretion, elects not to maintain those documents, then we can have nothing to respond to. And that's the issue.
But the resolution doesn't say quite that, right? It's not just saying we don't have all the documents. It narrows what a unit owner can actually access.
It narrows in the wording of the resolution, but clearly the resolution can no way trump state law with regard to that. Similarly, as this example, Mr. Dunbar argued on, I think it was page 7 of his brief, and he's argued at the trial court as well, making a comparison between the association records and the public records, governmental records, that are available to be copied. And Judge Pirtle mentioned that earlier with regard to that. That doesn't apply here, and it doesn't. And so having available, making access, but on the court's point, all means all, and I don't dispute that, but all means all in relation to what's maintained in the discretion of the Board of Directors.
So why didn't the resolution just say, yes, we give all unit owners everything we have that we actually maintain?
I can't answer that, Judge. It's a valid question.
Yeah, because it does narrow down what the unit owner can even...
It does.
Mr. Lee, are you saying the resolution doesn't include any documents?
No, the resolution is not... The resolution was intended as a guide for owners and was posted on the website and distributed to owners in other fashions. The resolution itself was intended to be a guide, and if the court takes a minute to review Exhibit 8, more specifically as it relates to Sections 4 and Sections 5, it indicates that in reviewing the request, I'm quoting from Section 5, in reviewing the request of the owners to the nature and extent of the documents requested, the TTCA shall determine costs and labor charge. But also included in the whole tenor of Exhibit 8 is essentially we'll comply with state law as it relates to the Condo Act.
But it says, in responding to a request of an owner for any financial records or financial information, the association, other than the annual budget, may make a policy on providing such documents if they determine the owner's demand is made in good faith and so forth, and that comes out of the nonprofit.
That's directly out of the nonprofit.
That's very restrictive. It's basically saying, other than the budget, we get to decide whether or not that request is being made in good faith.
I understand. And a good faith issue as it relates to this, the reason this board adopted this, and I think the affidavit of Nina Martin, which is Exhibit 6, and the affidavit of Kyle Kurtenbach, which is Exhibit 5, mostly Exhibit 6 addresses that with regard to the fact that there were four requests over the course of 22 months for Mr. Dunbar, pages of requests. And the board used this resolution as an attempt to say, the nonprofit corporation has the provision in the Act, rather, has a provision that we can determine if it's made in good faith. There were some references in the appellee's brief related to Mr. Dunbar prior to this, but Mr. Dunbar taking documents that the association provided him and published him on his website.
I understand that, and then you're out of time, but I do have one more question for you. I'd like to talk very briefly about the master deed, and the evidence of that was just an amendment signed by the board president, I believe,
right,
and then with an attachment of names of all the people living in the condo, right? It was not necessarily even a representation that these are two-thirds of the owners who voted to pass this.
Correct. The attachment does not, or the amendment and attachment does not, but I would direct the court's attention to Exhibit 5, which is the affidavit of Kyle Kurtenbach, where he indicated he personally counted the ballots, that there was more than two-thirds. Understand, this goes back to two things here. This goes back to an amendment in 2010. Mr. Dunbar acknowledged on the record before the trial court that it was not his intention to have pets removed from the condominium. And so in Judge Stratman's summary judgment order of August 2nd of 2016, Judge Stratman determined, based upon the evidence, which I assume is Exhibit 5, because I believe that was the only exhibit that was presented to the court specifically as it related to that motion for summary judgment on cause of action number 3, but also it was moot in that he did not want the pets to be removed. So if you vacate that master deed amendment, then Mr. Dunbar acknowledged that now you can't have pets.
But his issue was that it wasn't validly done, and didn't the master deed require the signatures of two-thirds of the owners in order for it to be an appropriate amendment?
The master deed requires the affirmative vote of two-thirds of the owners. It does not require signatures of two-thirds of the owners. My recollection of the extensive master deed, which has been amended a dozen times, is that it requires two-thirds approval of the owners then there. And then it ties in to Mr. Kurtenbach's affidavit, which was Exhibit 5, relating to the election was held in 2010. He personally inspected and counted the ballots, and there were more than two-thirds. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much over did we take, Mr. Dunbar? Minutes and 47 seconds. Mr. Dunbar, typically each side is allowed 10 minutes to argue. Because we took Mr. Lee over a substantial amount of time, if you would like those additional minutes to rebuttal.
I would. Thank you, Your Honor. I think that these issues have been dealt with in the briefs thoroughly, but there are a couple of points that Mr. Lee made in oral argument that I would take issue with. The last statement, that the deed only requires a vote, in my brief I quoted the master deed, and it requires, quote, in writing, duly acknowledged and recorded, co-owners representing two-thirds, must do so in a writing, duly acknowledged and recorded. It's not a vote that the president then can certify. It has to be done by the owners. With respect to the argument in chief, it seems that Mr. Lee is standing here conceding that the Condominium Act controls and that the resolution they passed and the action that they took on my request wasn't in compliance with the Condominium Act. The word game that is being played here, which really doesn't have anything to do with the case, is the word maintain. I haven't figured it out because they won't give me the documents. And when I asked for records, Mr. Lee is right. I asked for some records before this case in 2014. And in response to that one request, and perhaps that of other owners, they passed the resolution. My serial request then followed that. So the resolution was an attempt to stop me, but it wasn't after a bunch of requests from me.
So have you asked for records that you believe they are in fact maintaining, that they haven't turned
absolutely
over to you?
The check register, a listing of all of the payments, specific requests for transaction documents involving a board member. It's all enumerated in my brief, exactly what I asked for, that it was submitted as evidence at trial, and that they did not produce the records. I asked for a check register. I asked for the contract documents on a board member transaction. Could I be any more fundamental? There are certainly records that they have. Now, maybe they're playing a game that says, well, we don't maintain them, a property manager does, or Mr. Lee, our lawyer, does. If that's the word game that's going on, I'm not aware of it, but perhaps that's what it is.
Well, isn't there evidence from the property manager that his company maintains all the financial records?
Well, if that's the board's argument, that they delegate that to, they ask the property manager for their convenience to keep the association's record, it would certainly be my position that those are their records.
Yeah, he's just the custodian.
Correct. And I don't believe that by simply handing all of their documents to the manager, they no longer have to respond to unit owner requests because they don't have the records. They're maintained by someone else. Perhaps that's the argument. If so, well, so be it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. Thank you.